You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Last weekend saw tensions in the Middle East rising, with Israel and the United States launching strikes on Iran yesterday, killing Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei. Iran responded by launching strikes on Israel, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain and Kuwait. The conflict follows tensions between the United States, Israel and Iran, which in turn followed protests across Iran earlier this year. As the situation develops, the internal and external politics of Iran are precarious, and all parties remain interested in who could take power. To discuss how the events came about and how they'll affect domestic politics in Iran, I spoke to political scientist and activist Samira Qureshi. Qureshi spoke to 95BFM in an independent capacity.
And so for our listeners, I guess, unfamiliar with Middle Eastern politics, really briefly, for some context, why has this most recent conflict come about?
I think it's really important to build that context because, it's really important to highlight first internally the Islamic regime is really had for decades an oppressive security apparatus, oppressing any dissident political or views, and voices. So definitely this is an internal issues and also oppressive policies, foreign policies, that ambition of, these nuclear and stuff and also those proxies in the region, as many people already know. But also in terms of economy, very corrupted economy at the same time. And unfortunately, in last couple of technically years, more than a decade, I have to say, those general sanctions against Iran actually result in more corruption in this way that Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps could build even like a very corrupted black market and dominating technically the economy. So this is internally, but also I feel that we are here, unfortunately. So I want to be very clear. The first responsible for this situation for people of Iran definitely are the Islamic regime and those in power. But we shouldn't also forget the fact that for decades, Iranian people, those like me, actually researcher who monitor the social movements and protests and civil society activism in Iran, we know very well that people from the first years of a revolution, constantly they resisted. They have different protests. We just hear those big ones, but it's ongoing. And recent research actually just showing just between 2009 to 2024, just in Tehran, we had almost one protest, something every 3 days. This is huge, despite the fact these people know they will face bullet, they will face violent oppression, and every time bigger demonstration, every time worse situation in terms of oppressive, violent oppression. And this means people were sending messages that something is wrong with this regime. And we, outside and inside, we did lots of advocacy asking international community for taking some tangible actions. But unfortunately, not properly heard. People feel abandoned, technically. And now, look where we are, because just after this massacre in Iran, we can hear that European Union, for example, just one of the actions, they designated IRGC as a terrorist organization. And that was one among so many actions that was requested. And look now where we are. So I think, yes, that's a bit of background, I would say.
And we saw yesterday Supreme Leader of Iran, Ali Khamenei, was killed. What kind of political climate will that leave in his wake?
I have to say, I'm not really trying to, we always leave people of Middle East, we always hold a hope. That hope is our resistance. But if I put my political science hats on, unfortunately, and also living in Iran, studying about Iran, we have to understand that in the head of this regime, like Khamenei gone, doesn't necessarily mean the regime fall, huh? Because actually we are talking about a regime that has been actually vertically integrated over decades, ideologically embedded. So that's why now I'm worried that they make like a symbol of Khamenei now by some even non-Iranian fan and supporter over in the Shia world, and also militarized through parallel institutions and sustained also by very different networks. I'm not just mentioning about those proxies that have been weakened by Israel, especially after 12-day war. There are so many different networks, and this is the whole of this regime working. So it's not that easy that we would like to see it, you know, unfortunately. Yeah, I don't think that, understandably, many Iranians are happy, but I also understand them that they are full of uncertainty and anxious about the future, because
the US narrative around what's been going on in Iran has been, you know, a narrative of freeing people from corrupt leadership. However, we've also seen a lot of US interference in the Middle East result in a lot of harm to domestic populations. How does that balance, do you think, and how will that play out in Iran going forward?
Oh, another great question, because I think, I know that many maybe Iranian want to see this as help, because Trump said help is coming, but actually he never been very clear what type of help. Many Iranian advocates and activists, they call for humanitarian intervention, civilian focused, targeted humanitarian support. That is different from what we see here. Calling that, oh, this is for freedom of people in Iran, I would be very careful about this one. I would be careful to accept it. To me, is my concern is more around how exploiting decades of people's movement, freedom movement, for the geopolitical interest. We are talking about, on the one hand, we have that theocratic system, oppressive fascism, technically, system of Islamic regime. But also, on the other hand, the involved groups are Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu. That these two also, they don't have really good record when it comes to human rights, individual rights, and democracy and peace. So we need to be very careful about this one, to accept it. And also, there are so many evidence you mentioned about the previous, you know, the background of the United States and military-led interventions. There is really amazing work. I don't know if people like to read it, Advancing Democracy Abroad. In this book, they also mention very evidence-based that actually in modern era of during the foreign policy of the United States, only 4 of 17 military US-led military intervention technically can produce a kind of relatively positive democracies, and in most cases has unfortunately results hasn't been very positive. And I think it really depends on not only how they do this intervention, but what follows after the intervention, which is something we have to very carefully monitor now. And also the context. The success depends on the context. Calling simply that now people are coming out, or now this is an opportunity to build your future, but actually that's not that easy in this context, in Iran, inside, that we are talking about a diverse population, big population. We are still talking about this IRGC is still there, huh? So they already started attacking people who came outside to celebrate the death of Khamenei. So, and now we hear from Trump, that's another concern, that he talks about, you know, he's not very clear, very contradictory messages, he says. He also talks about these, you know, military groups put their weapons down. I'm just, we need to be very careful. Does he really, another negative result of this military intervention, we know that when they back some political figure that really just benefit their interests, interests, you know, the foreign interests, or sometimes when they prioritize the economic deals or, you know, like some short deals, short-term security over really a political change. I feel that it's not yet clear that Trump has a really clear political strategy and concern is, are you looking for a less dangerous system? Are you, you know, what's exactly the plan? So this is really dangerous, I think. And that, these are some of my really quick concern that I would have and would be careful to really accept the claim that it's for freedom of people. And at the same time, yes, every event like this one, we call it in politics kind of like it's a rapture. So it can open some opportunity, but not necessarily, you know, it's a horizon for a good change. It depends on so many factors that some of them I mentioned, particularly context. And I believe that at the end, technically, the positive one would be a collective from Iranian people. Unfortunately, with this situation that is unfolding, still we need to be careful, very uncertain. I cannot see be that very, very hopeful for that, you know.
We've seen tensions flaring up between Iran and other countries in the region, most notably Israel. How does that reflect domestic beliefs? Is that something that's developed just from the Ayatollah, or is that also something that we see among the Iranian people as well?
First, I think short, we need to remember that we are talking about Iranian people means a population over 90 million with very diverse views, political views, ideological views, and so on. But overall and general, also on the other hand, the fact actually is the Islamic regime was defined on the foundation of being enemy with Israel and United States. That's some of the foundation to define themselves against these two. And this kind of hostility and, as someone who lived in Iran and is still, you know, so many families, friends, and in touch with them, this is not something you see among Iranians. Iranians always say that we don't have problem with people of Israel. We don't have problem with people of United States. Actually, the big population of Iranian abroad, outside Iran, over they live in United States. So it's not about any problem that people have with other people. And we heard also this from that side as well. And I think it's all politics. And it's heartbreaking to see people between all these powers and, you know, like a cut between these power games and geopolitical games, really.
That was political scientist and activist Samira Qureshi speaking to me about the conflict in the Middle East and how it interacts with Iranian domestic politics.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.